Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com. Probably the best download decision you'll ever make.
This month's book is The Last by Hannah Jameson. The Last is billed as a post-apocalyptic thriller combining the end of the world with a murder mystery. Set in the present or very near future, it opens with the aftermath of a worldwide nuclear war, an event that leaves 20 people stranded in a remote Swiss hotel. A mixture of guests and staff, they form a microcosm of society as they try to adjust to their new circumstances. The group initially settle down to wait in the hope of rescue, relying on the hotel's extensive stockpiles to see them through the first months. But the discovery of a murdered child in a remote part of the building changes everything and puts everyone under suspicion. Rumours and stories about the hotel's evil past surface as the fight for survival becomes more demanding. As winter draws on, it becomes obvious there is no hope of rescue, and the group must somehow find an escape from their fragile sanctuary.
Day 3. Nadia once told me that she was kept awake at night by the idea that she would read about the end of the world on a phone notification. It wasn't exactly Kennedy's Sword of Damocles speech, but I remember that moment word for word. For me, 3 days ago, it happened over a complimentary breakfast. I was sitting by the window, looking out into the encroaching forest, the cleared path around the building leading to the rear parking. There was a hum of chatter from couples and one or two families on early checkout, but I was the first of the conference down. We had all stayed up late drinking the night before, but I tried not to deviate from routine, even if it hurt. We weren't supposed to be at this hotel. The conference had originally been slightly near Zurich, farther north, but there had been a fire at the intended venue 8 months before. The move had been arranged without much fuss, and the location changed to L'Hôtel Sixième, which we had joked was in the middle of nowhere, pain in the ass to get to. I was reading the opening chapter of What We Talk About When We Talk About Photo Reconnaissance, The Legal and Performance History of Aerial Espionage, taking notes for an upcoming lecture series, and my phone was on silent. A glass of orange juice to my left, and a black coffee. I'd spilled a little on the tablecloth in my eagerness to drink it and get a refill. I was waiting on Eggs Benedict. It's the banality that pains me. The last text I received from Nadia was sent at 11:30 the night before. It said, "I think everyone in my line of work is doing more harm than good. How can anyone love this job any more? I miss you so much. You always know what to say when I'm feeling like this. I feel bad about how we left it. Love you." I hadn't replied to her crisis of faith, because I thought I could get away with the delay. She knew the time difference meant I was probably asleep. I wanted to give it some thought and reply in the morning with something measured and reassuring. There was still a need for excellent journalism. She could still make things better. Something like that. An email might be better. We all thought we had time. Now, we can't send emails any more. A strange noise erupted from one of the tables, a shrill exclamation. The woman didn't say anything, just cried out. I looked up, and she was sitting with her partner, I assume, and staring at her phone. Like everyone else in the room, I thought she had just become overexcited by a message or a photo in return to my book. But within seconds she'd added, "They've bombed Washington." I hadn't even wanted to go to this damn conference. I can't entirely remember what happened in the hours that followed, but as I started scrolling through my own phone, the push notifications and social media timelines, I realised that Nadia had been right. It played out exactly as she feared. In fact, the headlines are almost all I can remember at the moment. Breaking. Nuclear attack on Washington in progress. Story developing. Breaking. 200,000 fatalities estimated, say experts. Breaking. Confirmed. President and staff among dead in nuclear explosion. Awaiting more information. Then there was some aerial footage from London, and we all watched the buildings vanish into dust in real time under an iconic pillar of cloud. That was the only footage available, so we watched it over and over. It didn't seem as real as the headlines. Maybe we had all been desensitized to the imagery by too many movies, Watching a whole city vaporise like that seemed too fast and too quiet. A plane went down on the outskirts of Berlin, and we only knew Berlin was gone because someone in the plane had uploaded a video of them going down. Dust of the engines, maybe. I can't remember what she was saying. She was crying and hadn't been speaking English. It was probably just goodbye.
The story is told through the journal of an American academic, Dr. John Keller, who styles himself as possibly the last living historian. Despite the loss of his family, who were in the United States when the war broke out, Keller tries to document events in a rational way. However, his personal feelings and fears creep slowly into the narrative, reflecting the uncertainties that surround the group and their future, and our faith in him as a reliable narrator becomes eroded. This is especially so when supernatural elements begin to enter the story, with the ghost child haunting one room, whilst tales of a long-dead serial killer are whispered in the corridor.
Day 62. I'm not sure what to make of Nathan's story. It's got me thinking more about why we all came to be here. I can't imagine finding God here like his father had. As far as I can see, he is conspicuously absent. If there was a God, and he wasn't an interventionist, then I think he'd be feeling very disappointed by his failed experiment right about now. There is always the possibility that Nathan could be lying for the sake of a good story, but I can't see why he would do that. I wondered fleetingly whether mental illness was something that could be learned, inherited without being passed through a bloodline. But I'm going to keep that train of thought to myself. There is no evidence that Nathan is crazy. After a quiet morning, I spent most of this afternoon up on the roof with Dylan and Nathan, trying to fully remove the lid of the first water tank. Dylan, with a rope tied around his waist and a makeshift harness, was balancing on the far edge of the tank. I was at the top of the ladder, also with a rope tied around my waist, looped over a hook that Dylan had welded to the structure. No one was sure if it would hold. We didn't have a way of testing it. There was no wind today, and it wasn't cold either. The air felt heavy and dense. I was sweating for the first time in weeks. I shrugged my coat off and let it drop onto Nathan's head. "Thanks," he called. I took hold of the saw with both hands and wrenched it left, right, then left again. "You all right?" Dylan checked. My face still hurt, but it wasn't hampering me. "Yeah, almost." The metal began to slide, and I dropped the saw, gripping the top of the tank so hard that the jagged edges left from our previous work cut into my hands. I thought the remaining part of the lid was going to fall into me, dragging me off the side of the tank with it. It could likely have ripped me clean in half if the rope around my waist held. More likely pinned me dead to the rooftop.
The last is Jameson's fourth book, and is markedly different from her previous novels. Her earlier books were more straightforward crime thrillers that are more familiar and more violent than her latest work. The last is more complex and ambitious, with a relatively large number of characters and several threads to the plot. The premise is intriguing, with echoes of Agatha Christie's famous "And Then There Were None," and the setting, a possibly haunted, isolated hotel in the middle of the Swiss countryside, has enormous potential. Sadly, some of these threads are not as fully explored as they could have been. There is a suggestion that there are other people living in the hotel, lurking on the upper floors and stealing, or worse, at night. This is a wonderfully creepy idea, but it is mentioned and then vanishes again. At least half of the characters are names with no story and no impact on the main events, and some of the main players lack credible motivation. But the biggest disappointment is the ending, that seems a bit rushed and contrived. This is a great shame, as the whole idea has such potential. I did enjoy much of this book, and some aspects caught my imagination, most especially the setting, that's almost a character in its own right, and the narrator, John Keller, who was the most honest and engaging character. Reviews have been mixed, with readers loving or hating the last. If you are at all curious, then why not try it for yourself?
From the magic of the mind to the excellence of eternity, this is the Book of the Month podcast from Southside Broadcasting, a whole new area of broadcasting excellence.
Strokes affect 130,000 people in England and Wales each year. Here's a recipe that can dramatically decrease your chances of strokes.
Excellent. I better get a pen.
167 grams of calcium.
Hang on. Slow down. And one tablespoon.
Remember, any more than one tablespoon could kill you. Any less than one tablespoon could kill you.
Right, what was
and
the recipe?
That's the recipe.
Oh,
if you would like a more simple solution, you can always call Pharma Nord on 01670 519989.
All right.
Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
Let me see if I can jot that down. What was the number again?
01670 519989. Or visit the website pharmanord.co.uk.
And how do you spell Pharma Nord, I wonder?
pharmanord.co.uk.
It's almost as if I'm having a conversation with the radio.
Don't be silly, that's impossible.
Pharma Nord, winning the war of nutrition.
You're listening to a Southside Broadcasting podcast. Southside Broadcasting is a media company which aims to provide a wide range of features from the rural, health and lifestyle worlds. You can regularly listen to entertaining podcasts with interviews and correspondence from Los Angeles, Nashville, New York and London. You can take part in our Book of the Month features, grab some great nutritional advice, enjoy broadcasts from the Great Yorkshire Show, the Lincolnshire Show, and enjoy local football reviews with our regular feature, Fly Me to the Moon. You can even hear a BAFTA award-winning director drive a train full of teddy bears. You can listen to these and many more podcasts at southsidebroadcasting.podbean.com. For further information on how you can join over 35,000 people who regularly download our podcasts, call us on 01642 854 742 or email info@southsidebroadcasting.com now.
In today's crowded world, it's sometimes hard to get heard. And sometimes you need a little extra push to be heard. That's where Manila PR can help. We specialise in online radio and press for independent bands, with prices to match, and have been doing so for the last decade. So if you have a noise to make, make it with Manila. Visit manilapr.com now.
Being selected by Jenny Finch and her team for the Book of the Month is quite frankly one of the pinnacles of any writer's ambition. Don't ask me how I know this. I just do.
Of course, of course. Jenny, would you like to just declare how Hannah Jameson came to be selected for a Book of the Month? Because there's a personal contact here, I believe, which connects with Morecambe and Vice.
Ah, there was supposed to be, and she was one of the casualties of the storm. Ah. She was supposed to be appearing there. And they produced a list of suggested reading for all the authors who were going to be there. And that's how I found the last.
There we are. So let's move to Rob. Apocalyptic tale, an event of the last days and so on.
Set in a hotel like The Shining.
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't mention that.
Clearly,
it is like that with it.
I was getting endless corridors. Yeah, I was getting a lot of The Shining, and even the twins that you get in The Shining with the young children there, and the sort of notion. We didn't quite have a red rum moment, but there were sort of subtleties that were being put into place with that.
But I thought it was absolutely compelling. I read it straight away because I couldn't put it down. I read it in a couple of days, and I thought it was phenomenal, and from so many aspects. And I was just looking through it now because the thing that strikes you afterwards is you're looking through the book and things are unraveling within days and it's only about a couple of months after a disaster has happened, and within that time there've been within this hotel where this group of survivors think that they might be the only survivors. And that's because of the internet going down in a way that they've lost their link, which is interesting, isn't it? It's a very modern story in that because that communication to the outside world has gone, they fear that they might be the last. Mm. And then you've got all sorts of intrigues and factions and people splintering off and behaving abominably. And it's quite a sort of bleak tale about humanity, which maybe resonates with lots of things that that happen in our modern world, unfortunately.
There is that sense that whether you're watching one of the reality TV shows, in inverted commas, or whether you're into post-apocalyptic fiction and so on, that it takes very little just to literally trigger off almost a meltdown.
Yeah.
And although we find that actually, mini spoiler here, there are certain elements of society that have actually survived, and there's a sense that things will work through that. We don't quite know where we're going. I felt it was trundling on quite nicely, and then I felt as though she almost rushed the ending. Yeah, it almost just felt as though the last sort of few chapters goes, and then there was this, and there was, mm-hmm. and it sort of, and then we might go or not, etc. It's almost as though she kind of didn't have the kind of confidence to actually say, I'll just either play this out or leave it on a sort of bleak
well,
note.
Well, I've got to say, I was delighted that it concluded at the end of the book, that it wasn't a trilogy, because I'm sorry, but it really depressed me the amount of, I understand why authors do it, but that you get to the end of the book and you're aware in the last few pages that it's not going to be resolved, it's going to go into another book, and I find that's an incredible cop-out, really.
The sequel is clearly there. It's whether the lead protagonist, John, can effectively sort of make
it. It doesn't need a sequel, though, does it? It definitely, the main, you know, it definitely stands alone.
Well, it is the last.
Yeah, exactly.
Technically, you know, the sequel to The Last would be The Last Plus One. Yeah, interesting. What about the characters?
There actually could be a prequel, couldn't there? Before The Last, I suppose, might be more.
I think there's always a way. I mean, look at To Kill a Mockingbird. It took several years, but she got there in the end. Exactly. So in terms of your...
The characters.
Yes, the characters. Any favorites?
Well, I think as Jenny alluded to, there was nobody that was beyond sort of... everybody had their major flaws, and everyone was tested. And I did like the way that the shock of what happened, even though that somebody's staying in a hotel a long way away from the explosions that have wiped out other cities, there's still an amazing shock, and there's suddenly that interferes with the memory processes. I thought that was interesting, and things coming back in flashbacks. But as I say, you realise that because you're going day by day, almost like through his diary as he writes it down, that you haven't gone that many days on, and things are coming back slowly and haphazardly, really. So there was a sort of core of characters, and people came in and out in a way that there might exist in this big hotel, and people trying to live their own lives, but also having to come together. And reluctant, also the fact that the people in charge were almost reluctant leaders, which is interesting.
There were very few people who effectively took the lead, so to speak. I mean, other than maybe the female academic who had voted for the president that had caused the war, apparently, and then decided to actually stock up on lots of sort of essential items.
Yeah, and the person who works in the hotel, who knows the hotel, he takes some sort of ownership because he knows the building, he knows all the resources and stuff like that. But at the same time, doesn't really want to impose himself. And then the fact that there's a mystery wrapped around, as Jenny said, and you begin to wonder whether it's actually relevant and whether the energies are being channeled. It's challenges whether you've been taken off course here. No, it's an intriguing book, really.
And you're young enough to remember, Rob, movies like Threads, the BBC apocalyptic tale of the 80s, maybe not The War Game in the 1960s, but areas which deal with post-apocalyptic fiction. There's obviously The Road, I think, Cormac McCarthy.
There was that period on TV, wasn't there, when you had some really bleak post-apocalyptic TV, because Survivors, the Cold War was still going on, wasn't it? Well, yes, that's right, yeah.
That was not a nuclear apocalypse, that was a flu outbreak.
Yeah.
Okay, Jenny, I mean, a chance to reflect on the whole process. I mean, you said you kind of, I got the feeling you half liked it and sort of thought it was quite good in parts, but didn't quite sort of work in other areas.
Yeah, I think it was in the end very ambitious. It was a very big story, and it felt as if it had been truncated and bits had been chopped out. Mm-hmm. I was really disappointed there wasn't more about the hotel and these possible other people living upstairs and stuff like that, mm-hmm. because I've stayed in one or two of these huge, rambling Swiss hotels, and they're fascinating. The one thing you want to do is explore the corridors, and I wanted to explore these corridors, and I feel thwarted.
And clearly Rob mentioned the connection with Stephen King's The Shining. That was obviously a middle American experience of the hotel in the wilderness and the isolation. The haunted house in many ways, a standard trope that you'd get. It's not a horror novel, but do you think that there were areas that maybe Stephen King would have said, yeah, I could recognise that?
I think so, yes. There are distinct similarities, and in many ways the pace of the story follows the same kind of beat that King had. In The Shining. So I think, yes, I think he would have recognised it.
Is it a good holiday read? I mean, as we head towards the festive season, would you actually say yes in the light of all manner of other events, get hold of a copy of The Last by Hannah Jameson?
It's certainly absorbing. As Rob said, once you start, it's very difficult to put it down because you do want to know what's going to happen. If you want a good giggle, I can't recommend it. But if you want something to dive into and absorb and isolate yourself for a little while, it's perfect for that.
Mm. Well, the time has come, the walrus said, another little text entirely, but to talk not about cabbages and kings, but actually to put the scores on the doors. Rob, what would you give The Last by Hannah Jameson?
I'm giving it 9.
9?
Yeah.
You see, I'm going 7. I'm going 7 because I thought there were areas that didn't quite work. Jenny?
I'm going 7 because of its technical flaws.
Oh. Yeah, well, there you are. Mm-hmm. Astounding. And probably, if it hasn't already been optioned, I'm sure there'll be movie characters still thinking at this very moment in time about how they could possibly put something together for that and produce a Netflix series or something, which will be all sorts of other areas. Okay, this has been the Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting for November, December. We've had one or two sort of slight changes in terms of that. We will be back in 2020 with another book, which we're keeping secret at present. We might indeed use social media to actually reveal exactly what that text happens to be, because we can't reveal too much. Well, we could, but then it would take away. It's like opening a present before Christmas, really. So, you know. And actually, if people have got suggestions, I'm sure, Jenny, if people would like to suggest a book of the month, be it classic or contemporary, simply dropping an email to info@southsideradio.com or info@southsidebroadcasting.com. We would take all suggestions under advisement.
Just give me a few weeks' notice, because I am dyslexic and I read slowly.
That's the point. Keep reading.
Book of the Month on Southside Broadcasting. Podbean.com. Probably the best download decision you'll ever make.